Welcome back to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. Hugh Weber is the host of the Potluck Society. You can find it at listen.sdpb.org, or you can subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. Hugh, welcome back.
It's great to be here, Lori.
We're going to flick some things today, the flick board. Who are we who are we meeting?
This is the kind of story I've been looking for a while, someone that has a standard day job but is doing creative things on the side. So during the day, Jim Braunschweig is executive director of the foundation at Western Iowa Tech Community College. He lives in Dakota Dunes. But the rest of the time, Jim is the CEO and founder of Flickboards, which is what we're going to talk about today. He was looking for a unique Christmas gift for his son and wanted to find a game that would get him off electronic devices. And where he arrived was the idea of Flickboards. These are, you know, something that is probably better experienced in person than it is described on the radio. So I gave Jim the hard job of describing that.
A Flickboard is about 32 inches long by 16 inches wide. They're branded or customized with your favorite logo or picture of your favorite football, soccer, or we now also do basketball team currently. It has, depending on the sport that it's mimicking, it has that many pegs for the players. So the football version and the soccer version have 22 pegs aligned on this board. The basketball version right now has 5-on-5, so there's 10 total. And around the outside of this board is trim. And what the trim is there for, so think of a big picture frame. Basically looks like a big picture frame with pegs sticking out of it. Now they each come with a little baggie with four chips, and you play a game using one of those chips laid down on the board, and each person then, each player, two players, or four if you want to do teams, is trying to score in the opposing opponent's goal or little basket hoop that's drilled into the board. And they take turns flicking this chip across it. And the first to 5 for football wins, the first to 21 in basketball wins, and the first to 5 in soccer wins. That's essentially how it's played. Now, on the back of the board, what's really important, I mentioned it's already customized or it has your favorite team or logo or art on it, is actually a pre-routed hole in the back, self-leveling, where you just need one nail or screw in the wall. And the board weighs about 7 pounds. It also has little footies, little foam footies in all four corners, so that when you're done playing the game at your tailgate, your family get together, wherever you are, you can actually hang it up as a display piece in your kids' room, family room, bar, restaurant, or even at the office, and take down when you're ready to play it or hang it up. So our tagline again is Flickboards, play it, display it.
It sounds simple, Hugh. Have you played?
So yes, I am. I must say, this isn't just an advertisement for Flickboards. There's a bigger point coming here. But I am an experienced Flickboard player. My 4-year-old, my 8-year-old, myself, we play a lot of Flickboard, and I can tell you, it's harder than it sounds. So I asked Jim to explain what makes a good Flickboard player in his experience, and I found his answer to be pretty insightful about business and entrepreneurship, creativity, and life in general.
Youth and inexperience, and oh, Hugh, you're going to love this. Just a unintimidated approach to things. Just jumping right in. So when I take this thing to tailgates, when we take it to craft shows, or even bars or restaurants, when I've seen people play it for the very first time, the youthful, the young, joyous kids who just come in, somehow they see the chip and they just flick it. They just bat it in there and they just, no fear. The adults are always so timid. They don't want to be embarrassed, like how they tap it, especially the very first time when they have friends around. They look at it like it's such this simple, oh, this is just nothing. This is kind of dumb. And they kind of nonchalantly will kind of, you know, pass it off. And they really struggle. It's so funny watching some of the adults struggle. I've had people play on the board for literally 10 minutes and just keep hitting pegs right in front of them. They can't do it. And then you put a couple of 6 and 8 and 10-year-olds on there, and they're scoring left and right. And they're just, again, they don't have any fear or embarrassment of getting into it. So I would just say going in with just a fun attitude of trying something different. So that's what's kind of cool about the Flickboard, and I think when people play it.
The metaphors for life, you. How is it being?
A metaphor for life.
How is the Flickboard being used? You know, extend that metaphor.
Yeah, so this is what's interesting. Jim shares stories about high schools. They're using it as an icebreaker between mentors and mentees. They're being used by blind students, which I think is interesting because they can feel and kind of identifying the playing field with it by touch and then play just as well as someone with sight. He has a vision for them being used in children's hospitals around the world. But as most things do, it's the personal story that means most, and it's about connecting across differences.
I've even seen my own son engage with my father-in-law. So my dad actually builds them. It's my dad and I and Brady, my son, who make them. But my father-in-law was kind of part of the inspiration for my son. They wanted to play a lot of games. And Brady always wants to play the iPad or technology piece, as most kids do. And my father-in-law would always want to play card game or some sort of other traditional board game type. Well, my father-in-law didn't really like the technology, didn't understand what was going on. My son didn't quite have the attention span to play the games my father-in-law wanted to play. But putting the Flickboard down for both of them, you had a 60-year-old, well, late 50s, I don't want to age him here, 50-year-old and a 4-year-old at that time engaged in a game, as I mentioned earlier. Youth actually has an advantage in this. You can't take it easy on young kids in this game. And they're both challenged in it and also enjoying the simplicity of the game. And it really, that was the original thing I came with the Venture School, was bridging that gap, that communication gap between youth and their grandparents and everywhere in between that, as college kids, parents, anyone can really play and enjoy the game.
So let's talk, Hugh, about that, creativity and that innovation and what's next for Jim Braunschweig.
Yeah, so Jim has had some success. He's sold a lot of these boards. They are branded with Iowa and Nebraska University. You can now buy SDSU or USD for those fans in the listening audience. But it's what's next that I think has him thinking about how he might help others, which is interesting. Those that are just starting out on this creative, inventive, entrepreneurial journey.
I want to write a book, and it would be titled Surviving Your Success, an Entrepreneurial's Guide to Years 2, 3, and 4. Because what's funny is the challenges that I found in that very first year of customer discovery and telling people about my idea and really seeing if it was received well and actually had legs. You have to have sales, and that's what I was able to accomplish in that first year. But then what do you do after that? And again, right where I'm kind of at when I mentioned, do I grow the company organically? Do I find a partner? This is the more challenging part too. If you find out you have a good idea, it's all in the execution. Lots of people have ideas, but it's all about timing and execution. So I would love to share the challenges with entrepreneurs, or at least give them that idea that, hey, if you get a taste of success, what are you doing next? So I'm always trying to challenge myself with that next step. I'm always thinking in the future. If, you know, there's one thing that so many people as an entrepreneurial, there's so many people that will tell you can't, it hasn't been done, here's why you shouldn't. And they're trying to help you sometimes. They're trying to save you from heartache. They're trying to, they're just trying to help you see, you know, that this is going to be a challenge and they hope you can handle it and stuff. But so many people will try to hold you back. You have to have enough passion and gumption and belief in yourself to put it out there and go. But again, once you get there, it becomes, again, that big question of what's next.
I like the title of that, Surviving Your Success. Right?
There's some real self-awareness for Jim. Jim hasn't arrived. He hasn't had a giant exit. There isn't millions of dollars of venture capital. But
right.
He knows that there's a bigger lesson that he's learned in this process and something that he'd really like to share with others.
Do you see that a lot with the creatives that you meet, Hugh, that there's a barrier after an initial amount of success and an idea? Hey, people are interested, whether that's for entrepreneurs or artists or whomever, and then trying to push ahead and say, okay, well, I got some traction, but what's next?
Yeah, I think in general, whether it's entrepreneurs or creatives, there's this general sense that unless something's growing, it's getting bigger, it's getting better, it's getting more high profile, that somehow that in itself is a failure. I mean, I can speak to my own experience of coming out of Oda, which was an organization that I was, you know, humbled to found and lead for a number of years. And the day we announced that Oda was going to wrap, the question I was asked most frequently was, what's next? And the assumption was something bigger, something more vibrant. And I think sometimes it's a matter of maintaining or even looking at an entirely lateral move in career. So I think creatives face that because these things are such a personal expression, because these boards are a product, but they're also a relationship with Jim's dad and his son. It becomes a personal conversation as much as it does a professional conversation, which can make it emotional.
Or you grow a beard and just spend some time thinking about life, right? Not that you know anything about that. I think that's interesting, though. I think we could talk a lot about that, just the challenge of, you know, of redirecting after a creative project ends or a business project, you know, hits a plateau. Good stuff, Hugh.
All right.
Thank you.